my girl, don't lie to me. Tell me, where did you sleep last night? Come on, tell me, baby.
It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're listening to Where Did You Sleep Last Night by Huddie Ledbetter, more famously known as Leadbelly. Fans of the band Nirvana may recognize this song from when the band covered it for their 1993 MTV Unplugged performance.
This week marks a birthday for Leadbelly, and here to talk about the musical impact of this legendary folk and blues singer, we're joined by Kip Lernell. He is a music professor at George Washington University and co-author of the book The Life and Legend of Leadbelly. Kip, thanks for joining us.
You're most welcome.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Leadbelly's early years. Where did he come from?
Well, he grew up around the Arklatecs. Ironically, he grew up very close to where my spouse lives, around Shreveport, Louisiana. He was born right on the Texas-Louisiana border just at the time the oil booms were getting going, and he's buried in Latex, Louisiana, which is probably about 24, very close to the border of Texas, Louisiana, which is where he grew up.
Now, I hate to ask the obvious question, but how did he get the name Leadbelly?
Well, the usual story is when he was in prison for the second time, which was down in Sugar Land, Texas, down near Houston, he was not a very large man, contrary to what a lot of people think. He was probably only about 5'8 or 5'9, but he was very, very strong. And after all that work he'd done picking cotton in East Texas in the 19-teens, he was in prison in the early 1920s, but his stomach was so strong it felt like it was built out of lead.
Hmm. Well, this guy has an influence that looms large even today. What do we know about how he went from picking cotton to being such a huge, towering musical figure?
Well, it's a story that Hollywood would love, and in fact did to a small degree. There's actually a film from 1976 by Gordon Park called Leadbelly, which really talks about his early life, and it begins with him being discovered, so to speak, in Angola prison by John and Alan Lomax in 1933. And what happened was the Lomaxes were going through southern prisons in 1933, and then they went again in 1934 looking for what they thought would be untainted folk talent. And they would write ahead to wardens of prisons and say, we're coming through to do recordings for the Library of Congress. And Angola, which is in south central Louisiana, not far from Baton Rouge, was where Leadbelly was incarcerated at the time for attempted manslaughter. And the warden recommended that the Lomaxes go by to see him when they were there in the summer of 1933. And you can imagine what the prison would be like in August of 1933. But he recorded selections for them. The Lomaxes came back again in 1934, and it's a little bit more long and complicated with this, but they enabled him to a degree to get out of prison a little bit early. And he joined them on another song hunting expedition in the fall of 1934. And the Lomaxes, particularly John, was headed up to New York, and Leadbelly went along with him to some of the prisons in Alabama and Arkansas, and ended up in New York in the just before, right around Christmas of 1934. And when you look at the headlines in newspapers in New York in 1935, it's, sweet singer of the swampland comes to New York. A murderer comes to sing in our town. So it was really quite sensationalized. And that's how Leadbelly ended up in New York, was just utter caprice in many ways.
Let's get another taste of his music. Here is a Midnight Special.
Yonder come a Miss Rosie, and the world do you know? Well, I know about a April, and the dress she wore, Amarillo on the shoulder, piece of paper in her hand. Well, I'm going and ask the governor. He's trying to lose my man. Let the midnight special shine a light on me.
Now, this is a song I've heard covered by a lot of musicians over the years. What is the story behind that song, Kip?
Well, the Midnight Special was a train that ran near the prison in Sugar Land, and it brought people to visit the inmates, among other things. And when he's talking about the Light of the Midnight Special, it's kind of a metaphor for bringing some hope to the prisoners who were there. Leadbelly was in Sugar Land from about 1919 to about 1924, 1925. And so he and all of his fellow prisoners who were there were hoping the Midnight Special would bring somebody to visit them there in prison.
It sounds like one of the things he was known for was his talent on a 12-string guitar, maybe the thing that he's known for. He had a special way of playing it, didn't he?
He did. Had a very strong bass line that he played on guitar, which is what really impresses a lot of people. But people should also be aware that in addition to his prowess on the 12-string guitar, which he picked up probably around 1912 or 1913, about the same time he met Blind Lemon Jefferson. They were together for probably about 6 months or so. He also was a fairly accomplished accordion player, and he also made some recordings on piano. You know, he started off playing guitar and started playing in what was called suki jumps, which were kind of the down-home weekend blowouts that people had on Saturday nights. And he learned from his uncle Terrell. He learned to play accordion and play guitar. But the 12-string guitar didn't come until he was in his, he was probably in his 20s at that point. That's what he became famous for. However, in addition to that was the accordion and piano. And also he did a lot of unaccompanied either religious songs and field hollers, too. So he had really quite an extensive ability to accompany himself on a number of instruments. And also he was really quite an accomplished singer, too.
Well, let's get another listen to him now. This is a song I'm not familiar with, Bourgeois Blues. Kip, you laughed when I said the song title there. Why?
Well, earlier today, I was in that bourgeois town.
Really?
Yes. We live less than a mile from Washington, D.C. We live in Silver Spring, Maryland. I teach at George Washington University, which is very close to the White House. And that song is about Huddy Ledbetter being in New York in the late, being in Washington, D.C., visiting from New York, and having a difficult time finding a place for him to stay in a bourgeois town like Washington, D.C. He was at that time still quite involved with Alan Lomax, and I suspect that Alan had a bit of a hand in shaping this song, but think of it as a fairly important early protest song about conditions where blacks were not able to stay in the same kind of places that whites were. And so I found that humorous. It was a song I suggested was worth playing, but having lived around this bourgeois town since 1988, it has kind of a special meaning for me as well.
Leadbelly is a name that you hear when you hear musicians talking about their influences a lot, even to this day. What do you think that influence has been?
Wow, it has been profound and in many ways. I know that when Charles Wolfe and I were working on this biography, which came out in 1993, I ended up doing more of the interviews because that was just before we had kids and Charles was teaching at Middle Tennessee State and couldn't travel as much. And I vividly recall visiting Pete Seeger in New York. And, you know, Pete said, you know, that was Leadbelly. He really introduced so many people firsthand to what we had only heard on records, live Southern black blues and folk music. And so it wasn't only those live performances that captured Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie and so many others. Fortunately, he recorded quite a bit, especially by way of Moash for Ash Records and eventually Folkways and Smithsonian Folkways. And that legacy is something that has really gone and, you know, was well regarded at the time, but has stayed in print. And if you look at the number of recordings Leadbelly has available, he really has had a profound impact, not only when he was alive up through 1949, but his recorded legacy has been well cared for, too.
Kip, like a lot of people, I probably have felt Leadbelly's influence secondhand through the other musicians you're talking about. Briefly, should we all be going back and checking out Leadbelly, listening to the real deal?
Well, I always think, since my major interest is you know, grassroots American vernacular music. You caught me working on a book on bluegrass in Washington, D.C., as the call came in. People should always look at the grassroots. They should look at where things came from. You mentioned Nirvana, but, you know, Cotton Fields Back Home was a song that was, you know, Lead Belly's interesting. Did he write Cotton Fields Back Home? He at least shaped that song, and it's properly attributed to him. Whether that copyright legally should be his is a whole other matter. But that was covered by the Beach Boys. If you listen to blues singers from, and you know, blues rockers from Britain, if you listen to people from the folk revival, Lead Belly's tentacles are in a lot of surprising places.
Kip, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're most welcome.
That's Kip Larnell. He's a music professor at George Washington University, co-author of the book The Life and Legend of Lead Belly. Good Night, Irene by Lead Belly coming up under us there.